Chivalry is dead. Yes, it is dead. It's been dead since the 13th century.
I don't know. I think personal responsibility is a gateway to slavery.
If you have a reputation of being a liar and a cheater, I'm not going to lend you money.
Scathing. Love it. It's one of my favorite things. I live for the I told you so moments. Philosophers.
Philosophers.
You know, David, I've been thinking a lot this week about...
That's dangerous.
It is very dangerous. Something about, like, the enemy of happiness is thought or something like that. I think there's a quote.
That is the edgiest thing that I've heard all day.
Okay.
Well, no, that's not even edgy. That's just, like...
I'm 14 and this is deep.
That's like cringe. I am very smart.
Oh, man. Just a different flavor of the same kind of vibe that is I am 14.
I wish I could be stupid like the rest of you and be happy.
Oof.
I think that's the vibe that gives off.
Oof. Oh, man.
Wish I could be a sheep.
Oh.
Anyway, moving on. That's not what this episode
that
is about.
That's not what this is about. It could be. We almost talked about that, but I think we didn't determine there was enough to talk about. No, I was... I've been digging into a lot of, like... I've had a couple of things happen this week that I've come across that have kind of had similar overlapping themes. So, I was looking into some Lord of the Rings lore this week because I'm a nerd. I was learning a little bit about some laws in Germany because I'm also a nerd. And what do those two things have in common? Well, apparently in the country of Germany in the current year, it is legal for you to exercise self-violence and self-defense only for perceived damage to one's honor, which I thought was interesting. And that's also like the same thing that I was thinking about when I was looking through Lord of the Rings. Like, there's this idea of chivalry, right, that exists throughout time. Like, there's these different codes of honor. And, you know, I think that you'll... I don't know about you, but I hear a lot of people talk about how, man, back when people used to be honorable, all this stuff, like, there's like this weird longing for a time long past where people just did things.
Yeah.
They just did the, quote, right things, and you were just the right person.
By the way... No such time existed.
Yeah. I mean, I actually don't know that that's true, but I'd be hard pressed though to believe
people have been lying and cheating and thieving
and thieving
pinching
and pinching
forever.
Yeah, that's
for
true.
As long as people like
right. But those are dishonorable vagabonds, so...
Yeah.
We can dispense with them, I suppose. Anyway, so what do you think about when people bring that kind of stuff up? Besides the fact that you kind of have this overwhelming idea that it's like people are kind of appealing to a fantasy.
Yeah, it's a fantasy. So yeah, the sentiment, chivalry is dead. Yes, it is dead. It's been dead since the 13th century. The last time anyone used that word to mean what it originally meant, which was how to be a knight.
Right.
Which mostly had to do with, like, I don't know, taking care of your horse or something like that. Like,
actually, I think it was a manual for estate ownership, like, at the time. Because I'm pretty sure knights could own property back in the
yes.
certain times.
And that's the next place I was going is that, by the way, very few people in that time were actually knights who lived by chivalry.
Right.
Most people were peasants.
Yeah. And I think, as said before, knights were more or less somebody that... I don't think the knight was somebody that you would count on to go to war with. It was more or less like... It's just like any other kind of vassalage. You know, you just need somebody to oversee a piece of land and then give you some of what they've got in a primitive form of proto-taxes. You know?
Right. It's like your private security.
Yeah. Kind of. Except that instead of paying him with money, you pay him by giving him... He's like a lieutenant in a cartel, almost.
Yeah.
He gets a region over which he oversees... A region he oversees and thus can benefit from by taking some off the top. And as long as they don't take too much, you know, it's a fair exchange. But when's the, I don't know, like, what do you think people mean, though, these days when they're saying, like if someone, if you were to hear someone say something like, X person is a very honorable, like, man or a very honorable woman, like, what do you think the person's trying to say when they say that?
They exhibit various virtues of our society, okay. Like honesty. Mm-hmm. That's usually the biggest one that can get someone named honorable. Generosity.
Yeah.
Things like that.
As a quick tangent, why do we refer to judges by your honor?
Your honor. To make them feel better about themselves.
True.
That is the actual answer. Okay, yeah. Well, in principle, it's because, like,
they're supposed to be fair, I think.
They're supposed, well, and yeah, you would elect an honorable person to serve as judge, to be the one who is designated to solve everyone's conflicts with one another.
Yeah, that's true.
You want an honorable person to have that job.
Yeah, you want someone honest and fair and not, I think, and the honest part of this is not trying to take personal gain from something.
Right, that's the honorable part, yes. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense then.
Yeah. Yeah, in principle, that's it.
Yeah, if only we're like that.
If only we're actually like that, yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Do you think that's the same thing people mean when they talk about how, you know, people used to have honor and things like that? Do you think they're just kind of extending that through this idea that people back in their time, like, and to, I'm talking about people who are maybe of a different generation, like they're two or three generations old. And
boomers. Okay, anyway.
Boomers. Yes. Or before. And they imagine a time in which people, like, their perception of when they were young, like, yes, young adults, were that people were more honest or that people were more fair and less selfish. Like, that's their idea.
Well, everyone has rose-tinted glasses looking at their own childhood.
Right.
And that's the whole explanation.
Possibly, yeah. It's hard to say because we don't have metrics from that time of, like, how many lies were told per capita.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of it is a gut feeling type deal. I think though they are on to something, but it has a lot less to do with this idea that people were more honorable, I think, in the past. I think people were just held more accountable in the past.
Yes, that's where I was going to go with it. There's several possible reasons for this. The main one that's coming to mind for me right now is technology.
Yeah.
We are a lot more separated physically from the people we interact with now.
Mm-hmm.
And it is easy to just disappear from those people if you do something that would be considered dishonorable.
Right.
Whereas back in the day, you would definitely see those people again and be held accountable for your misdeeds.
Right. I think, and not only that, but, like, there's this idea that, it'd be like this. If you imagine, you know, the Green Acres of the day, where there's, like, 15 people that live in the entire town or something ridiculous like that. And the reason I'm making this is we are a lot more, if it weren't for the internet and technology, we are also just more densely populated than we've been before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, places that were small are getting smaller, and places that were big are getting bigger. You know, people just tend to be moving more towards urban or suburban environments as opposed to being just more rural,
mm-hmm.
at least in the United States. I assume it's a similar trend in other places just because, I mean, it makes sense. There's a lot of amenities, especially technological ones, that would drive someone to want to live more urban.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there was this idea that, like, you know, if you and I lived in a tiny town of 15 people and there was one sheriff and someone wronged you, you and the person who wronged you in the town both already before this event knew who the sheriff was, and you might file a report with the sheriff, although it wouldn't even be that informal. It was a lot more personal, where they would just come down to your house and ask you by first name what happened. And you would see that sheriff again later. Like, you knew who your sheriff was. Like, your local law enforcement officer was the local law enforcement officer. Or there was, like, two or three deputies. And you knew exactly who those people were. And you saw them frequently enough that you could follow up and see, like, hey, was this dealt with? And if so, then you had this sense that justice was done for you.
Mm-hmm.
Very much not so the case these days. Like, if your car is broken into, first of all, the likelihood of them actually ascertaining the person who broke into your car is low. By them, I mean the police. And if they do, you're probably not going to hear about it unless you get your stuff back, which you probably aren't. You know, like, I don't think a police officer is going to follow up with you to say, oh, hey, remember how you had your car broken into? Well, we caught the guy who did it. Here's his name or her name. And here's what we did, you know.
Thanks.
It's very similar to the closest experience that I can recall this would be like is, remember back in the day when you felt someone was cheating in a video game?
Mm.
What could you do about it?
Push the report button.
Yep. And that's it. Did that feel very gratifying?
Yes.
Really?
No.
No. Because it's like, cool, but they're still out there cheating.
Right.
And every cheater is the same person.
Okay,
right?
I'll tell you the gratifying thing. Is telling someone you reported them.
Oh.
That's like rule number one of the internet, by the way. You cannot report someone to the mods or put them on the ignore list without announcing to the entire game that you've done that. Anyway, go on.
But nowadays, there are several games that have implemented a feature that it will tell you. Now, I don't know how accurate this is, but there are games that I've played that if you report somebody, you'll get some feedback at some other point in time letting you know that, hey, disciplinary action was taken.
Words are hard.
Disciplinary action was taken due to one of your reports. So you kind of get this feels good moment of, oh, they got. Now, you don't know which person you reported got, and you don't know the name of the account of the person who got it, but you still feel better knowing that someone got what was coming to them. You know what I mean? And so, like, there's a sense of there is some justice in the world because they can't keep getting away with being a cheater. You know? It's the same thing, I feel like, with Times Then, is you could actually follow up with a local mod for your area, and they'll tell you if something happened, or if the town's small enough, you'd see it, you know? Also, lying was a bit more risky back then because, I don't know about you, but like if you walk into a Starbucks in a large city, you can be whoever you want to be to that barista. You'll never see that person again.
Right.
Or you won't remember them if you do, and it's unlikely you'll run into them again that in a way that you did like when they were the barista. Like you won't actually have an interaction again, so you could say whatever you want, and I think there are tons of people who do this that, like, I think that a lot of people actually front for who they really are. I don't know if this is true or not, but I feel like a lot of people, and it's based solely on the people that I know personally, having watched them in public around other people. I'm like, you are a different person in public than you are when we're hanging out at your house or whatever. Mm-hmm. And some of that is understandable, right? I think no one expects you to be the exact same all the time. Like you, but typically it's more open when you're in private company, right? Like the same person, but you know more about them. They talk about things they won't talk about in public, right?
Yeah.
But if they just change their behavior, like they're a lot more subdued, they don't like tell jokes all the time, but as soon as they get in public, they're just hamming it up real good, you know? It's kind of weird to watch, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of... It's kind of sus.
It's very sus, yeah. But back then, or if you live in a town with like very few people and those are the people you just have to interact with, things like that, I imagine, are very difficult to keep up with. So people just forego that and just behave the way they normally do all the time. You know, and maybe that makes people feel as though people are more genuine. Because I would say that's another component to being honorable. Just being genuine.
Sure. I don't know, maybe.
I'm just saying, I could see that. I don't know. But because that kind of comes on the back of honesty. Genuine, when someone says that's a genuine person, what they mean is that person is not lying to you about their motivations. Something that you otherwise couldn't really confirm.
Yeah.
You know, with certainty. But what about that? I mean, what do you think about that idea, though? Like, do you think that if people were held more accountable or that people were more honest and things like that, Dick, do you think if you like parse that word honor to what we're assuming those people mean. Would you agree with that statement that a society of people who carry those virtues would be a better society? If a society is comprised of a higher percentage of individuals who are virtuous in those ways, honesty, accountability, things like that,
mm-hmm.
like would that actually be ideal or sure. not?
I mean, I think that's the reason we hold those things as values and virtues, is because we would prefer it if people were that way.
Mm-hmm. So what's wrong with people? Like, is there anything wrong then with someone saying that? Like, instead of saying that people used to be a lot more honorable, which I think there's like this implied messaging that
people today aren't very honorable.
And they should be. You know
yes,
I mean?
that is true. People today are not very honorable, and they should be. But that doesn't mean that people in your generation were more honorable.
Fair enough. Okay, because that's what I was trying to get at without... I didn't want to like lead the ground, because like, to me, when I first hear someone say that, my thoughts are, yeah, but how? Like, how do you achieve this? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
How do you go about increasing the number of honorable people in your society per capita? You know? Because I feel like whenever I hear someone say, oh, people these days aren't that honorable, they're usually right about to talk about how punishments are not harsh enough.
Mm-hmm.
Certain things are not illegal that used to be. And if we would just do those things again, the world would go back to being an honorable place. I mean, that's a pretty regular, I think, conservative talking point is that,
yeah,
you know, back in my day, we used to hit kids and spank them, and, you know, people would just get in actual physical fights to sort problems out. You know, you would give
your
money away.
Things might actually
get
better if we did that, though.
You think so?
If we just fought each other? Yeah, maybe. Probably not, but...
Okay, that's an interesting tangent that's still related to honor, though. Because there's one other instance that I'm now thinking about it that I've actually thought about the concept of honor. I watched Ridley Scott's movie The Duel, or The Last Duelist.
Okay.
Or The Last Duel? The Last Duel, that's what it's called.
Okay.
And it's based on supposedly a real story of two French military officers in some point in time when which dueling was very common in France. Like, it was all the rage to whip your sword out and deal
with
problems.
Come on, man, let's duel. Everyone's doing it.
Pretty much. Or, well, this is, remember, I think at this time, in the story, it's Napoleonic France.
Yeah.
So, there's not, like, the military pretty much runs everything. Like, most people don't remember, like, think about this, but like Napoleon ruled essentially as a military dictator, just like
yeah.
anything else. So if you were in his military, you kind of could just do whatever you wanted, and as long as you didn't upset the chain of command. So there's this idea of, if I have a problem with you, I could just kill you because I'm a soldier and you're not. But that's gross. That's what evil dictators do. Instead, I'm going to say you offended my honor. You know, I am an honorable gentleman of the Emperor's Army of France, so
we're gonna have a nice little duel about it.
Yeah, so I'm gonna kill you while you're holding a sword instead. Like, I'm gonna give you a chance to defend yourself. You know, so pick up
even
a sword.
Even though I'm trained with a sword and you're not. Yeah,
exactly. Like,
pick so up, I win. Yeah,
right. It's still might makes right, but it's might makes right. But you can try. I'm not going to sneakily subvert you. Which, when you think about it. I mean, if I were a military dictator, that's an awesome system, because what is your biggest threat when you absolutely hold the most might? It's the other human tactics for dealing with dictators, which is mm-hmm. subversion, like, which is, and if you're looking at things in an honorable perspective, you know, subversion and subterfuge is not very honorable, you know, like, and even more recently, I can think of a time when the US military kind of had this feeling about, like, when we were like terrorists are not honorable because they won't just come out and fight us. It's like, yeah, because they're going to die. Like, I'm not agreeing with the terrorists, but at least they're
yeah,
being tactically
smart. I mean,
they said
the same thing about the American revolutionaries who had like,
literally,
instead of
yeah.
fighting in open battle, it's like, yeah, but they would die. You do what you got to do to win.
Yeah. Guerrilla warfare is a countermeasure to like an oppressive military
occupation.
A bigger
army. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're up against a bigger army, hide.
Yeah, just hide more and hit and run attack because that's what you can do.
Yeah, and just whittle them down.
Mm-hmm. But that's not very honorable, apparently.
Apparently.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like...
But you know what's better than honor?
Winning.
Winning.
Yeah. Determining what honor is in hindsight. Yeah. Kind of how it worked, though. No one in the United States, right after the revolution, was saying, yeah, I mean, we were real a-holes about it and really cheated, but you know what? We won. Good enough.
Nope. It was F the British. We did it.
We did it. Yeah. Woohoo! Look at how awesome we are. This small... group of coalition of small countries just defeated the British Empire.
Yeah, the British Empire.
Yes. Get wrecked. Yeah.
Yeah, and you should feel embarrassed about that.
Yeah, yes. Patriotism abounds. Yeah.
And no more taxes.
And no more taxes. The real thing to celebrate.
That is a real thing from our past that we should bring back.
Yeah, no joke.
Hatred of taxes.
Hatred of taxes, yes. Agreed. But... anyway, so with the duel thing, that's akin to fighting. Like, we're going to just use violence to resolve this conflict because it's just not worth the time of being sneaky and snide and continuing to maintain levels of, like, frustration, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I think that's how feuds get started, though. Honestly,
mm-hmm.
Like if you and I had a problem and I beat you up, you know, if you have a brother that's bigger than me, he might take issue to the fact that you got beat up and try to beat me up. And then he beats me up. And then my bigger brother thinks that that's BS and then beats up your brother. And then before you know it, you and your brother and me and my brothers are all meeting out on a bridge somewhere to duke it out regularly. And we're keeping score. You know what I mean? And because the score can never be even because then we're right back where we started. Someone's always trying to get the other hand, the upper hand.
Right. Then someone shows up with a knife. Then someone shows up with a gun. Like,
yeah. And it's just more violence justified with I'm sick and tired of the more conflict being justified on the basis of I'm tired of conflict.
Right.
You know what? I'm sick of fighting.
I'm bringing the peacemaker. Yes.
Yeah. I'm sick of fighting. I'm bringing a gun this time.
Right. We're going to settle it
once and for all. Yeah. Which literally is how, like, issues of. You stole my pen in high school, and now I'm going to murder your whole family, which seems a bit extreme.
But that's literally how these things
happen.
But
you put a few generations between the two things, and it seems totally, you know,
mm-hmm.
adequate. Yeah. Not great.
No, it's awful, actually.
Yeah, actually pretty awful. Although I will say it is one thing to have two groups of combatants agree to meet on the field of battle and duke it out. I wouldn't do that. I think it's bad to do that, but... at least no one's forcing them to be there.
Right.
It's a bit different than being forced into a mediation on terms that you do not think is fair. Because you're also not resolving the issue. Because you turned... it's like both sides turning their guns over to a middle party who then uses those guns to enforce the fairness. Whatever that is.
So, I had a thought. All right, so these days, if someone challenged you to a fight, you know, you would decline, as you just said.
Well, I didn't say that.
Well, okay.
It depends, actually.
Okay.
And that's where it gets tricky, because I'm sounding like a hypocrite now.
If someone has a minor dispute with you and decides that he wants to settle it with violence...
Oh.
...and challenges you to a fight...
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, so then, what does he do? He calls you a wimp for not wanting to fight.
Okay.
What? Now, if we're going to decide that actually not fighting is honorable, what should you call him back?
I don't know. I would ignore it, honestly.
Well, like, that might be the best option, but...
it's just, like, I would think something along the lines of this isn't worth my time, which is both a slight to the other person and the truth. And then I would move on because it doesn't bother me all that much. Because, mm-hmm. like, unless they, and this is why I said earlier, it depends on how inconvenient them being upset at me is to me.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, there are very few people in this world that can be so upset with me as to, like, refuse to associate with me, and I would care. Because, like, you would have to have something that I wanted that I couldn't get from somewhere else.
Right. Yeah. I don't associate with lots of people.
Right. But what would you call him back then, though, if not fighting was honorable? Or is that the genuine question? Like, you don't that, think that is a thing?
Well, I mean, I could come up with words associated with aggression, like brute or something like that. Yeah. But I don't know.
I don't feel like those would be very effective, though, in a verbal joust. Calling someone a wimp is pretty powerful. Well, any variation of that claim being that you are inferior or weak.
You meathead. That'd be good.
Yeah, meathead. Yeah. Maybe. Although I do think that my honest gut reaction would be to like try to allude to the effect that I don't need you, that you're pompous. Like your right. idea that
I don't have to prove myself to you.
Exactly. Yeah. Like that's probably about as good as you can do. But you had to mean it. Like, that's the problem, I think, with statements like that, is that if you really do need that person, then they do kind of hold that over you. And that sucks. Which is all the more reason why you should be as self-sufficient as possible, or at least not, like, dependent on those that abuse the fact that they have something that you need or want, you know? Like, imagine you were a smoker that smoked cigarettes. Naturally. And
as most smokers do.
And there's one tobacco store in town. You kind of don't want to piss off the guy who owns the tobacco store.
Right.
Because you really need that person. Or at least to you, you do. So in that case, the choice to be a smoker comes with an additional cost of you're kind of at the mercy of someone else to
right.
sell that stuff.
You're beholden to the source. Yeah.
Right. Which, to be fair, that's kind of one of the biggest problems with monopolies, is that it does create a dynamic where
the source can get away with whatever they want. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not great. Why do we care so much about honor, though? Like, why is that? Like, why do we care so much about that kind of stuff? Or some people, I feel like a lot of people do care about it. They may not care about honor, if you called it that. But I do feel like a lot of people would get upset, you know.
That's the reason people get upset when you insult them, right? Because you're challenging their honor when you insult somebody.
How do you mean?
I mean, when you insult someone, you call them less of a person, essentially.
Fair enough. Yeah. That makes sense. Because in my head, I was thinking about, like, the other time I hear honor used a lot, or noble, which is kind of used in place of honor sometimes.
Yeah, we use those interchangeably now. Yeah.
Where someone will say, like, this was so-and-so. They were dumb, but they were a noble. They were an idiot, but they were a noble idiot. Which is like, I'm insulting them, but I'm juxtaposing that with a positive trait so that people know that I'm not trying to hurt feels. And I'm not trying to dismay, like trying to smear this person. I'm just trying to be honest about the situation at hand, while also trying to maintain an air of respect and peace,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is another thing. I feel like honor and respect kind of go hand in hand. And I think respect gets used a lot more. Like, you hear that, right? I've heard complaints before that X group of people should be more respected, whatever that means.
Yeah. Okay.
Or that someone would assert or claim that they deserve respect, you know.
Well, it's up to you to demonstrate that.
Yeah, but I don't think
if you deserve so much respect, maybe you should behave respectably.
But I think that's just, we can just replace the word respect with honor, and we mean honorable, the same thing.
Yes.
Because I will say I have noticed that, like, especially in the workplace, I think that's something that is a really easy. It's an interesting paradigm where you see it, because you typically have people of various age groups working in the same place. I've noticed that it is way more common for younger folks to feel as though they aren't being respected. Mm. But the people who take disrespect the most seriously are older.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, they both are concerned with it.
Young people are used to not getting respect because they haven't for most of their lives.
Yeah. Because we don't respect children.
Right. yeah, nobody respects children.
Yeah, because they're awful.
I mean,
they're little liars,
among other things.
Among other things.
But yeah, but an older person feels like they've earned their respect, right? And so when they don't get it, then they feel slighted.
Yeah.
Or insulted.
Which I think that's an interesting thing. I feel like the most and least respectable people are young or older people.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I hate the idea of experience the way a lot of people kind of envision it. The biggest, most glaringly awful place that this occurs is when you are applying for a job or it's on a job listing.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have you seen, you know, X to Y years of experience?
Every job that I've ever applied
every
for.
Every job that you ever apply for has it on there. I hate that.
Yeah.
And I know that there are certain industries where that's a lot more easy to measure, but like the industry that you and I tend to work in, mm-hmm. you know, tech fields in general.
Why does it matter how many years you've been doing it?
Yeah. Right.
It only matters if you're good at it. Right.
Yeah, sort of. I get what's trying to be gauged. It's experience, right? And experience, when you're saying I'm looking for someone with 3 to 5 years of experience, what you're actually saying is the average person gains experience, whatever arbitrary number you want to put on that,
mm-hmm.
at a certain rate. So if you are at that rate, in 3 to 5 years, you should have enough experience to qualify. You should have encountered enough things that I would have expected somebody of this caliber to encounter, right? But it's not like, not all jobs are the same.
Right. Maybe I did 1 year at the most challenging, you know, position of this type that there is, right?
Right. Like a good so example. Like
I can, like, you know, I can totally outclass someone with, you know, 5 years of experience just because I've been through all the crap at this other place. Yeah.
Right. Well, and a good example of this is, like, let's do something that's a little more down to earth for, like, most people, like cooking.
Hmm.
If you work at a fast food restaurant, it does not matter to me whether you've worked there for 2 years or 10 years. You know about the same 2 years in as you do in 10 years. The return on investment for what you know, what you learn, decreases because...
Right, yeah. You have definitely stopped learning after 2 years.
Yeah, yeah, there's only so much you can learn. And almost everybody who does that job works a consistent number of hours. Like the longer you're working there, the more average the number of hours you're actually working is.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other jobs where, you know... But like if you're a chef in a kitchen at a fancy restaurant that changes the menu every month, you know, the amount of experience you get is much, much more for the same amount of time invested.
Right. And you may never stop learning at that kind of a job.
Right. Yeah. So your mileage is a lot higher is the way I would look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Similar thing would be like if you were a nurse. If you work 40 hours a week as a nurse every week, then yeah, it's a steady amount of... You could use years to calculate experience. But if you are... But which 40 hours? Are you working the 40 overnight hours when it's quiet and calm? I honestly don't know. I'm sure there are probably some nurses that are upset at me right now who are like, well, no, nighttime's the worst shift. Like, whatever it is, though. Were you working the easier shifts where people were a lot less likely to come in and you didn't have to deal with people with wild injuries and in situations that are difficult, more difficult to manage? Were you working at a hospital in the middle of like a relatively safe area where the most common thing you saw were like people giving birth or having heart attacks? Or were you working in like, or like compared to a field medic in like the military who's treating grievous wounds constantly? Like it's just different,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so that's why I hate seeing, 2 to 4 years of experience. Okay, what do you mean though? Like, and I get that's why there's a range. It's 2 years of hardcore experience to 4 years of mild experience. But I do not think it's always like that. You know, like to me, I feel like depending on what you're doing with software, for example, if you're writing software that, if you're constantly writing new software for different applications and different technologies, that's a very high mileage job. As opposed to someone who's maintaining like a legacy system. Not to say that they aren't both valuable bits of experience. They're just different. And I would be looking at the mileage when I'm hiring somebody. Because I don't care if you've only been in the business for a year, but if you worked 100 hours a week for a year on some like really cutting edge stuff, that's the person I want over somebody who's worked 40 years, but they've been supporting the same piece of software for 40 years. It's just different, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of the time. So translating that to people who are old, the impression is that everybody does the same things. Everybody gains experience roughly the same way. But that is so not true when it comes to the people's lives they live. You know, like if you're an older person who has worked the same job their whole life, has only had the same friends, not had to face kind of struggles. Granted, the longer you're alive, the more reasonable and likely it is that you have had to overcome some things. Right. But there are young people who have gone to hell and back on something that deserve a lot of respect, you know? And then there are folks and the reason I would say that the most unrespectable people are older people is because you have all this, you could have been that person. Like the amount of experiences you would have had and the amount of decisions you've had to make, you know, could be large, but it's not.
But instead you did this. Yeah.
Yeah. Which again, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, you do you. But at the same time, like respect is one of those things that I decide to give it to you. You can't demand it from me,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that's my problem with like younger folks is that there's this idea that while they're correct in that you do not just need to be old to have experience and to be respectable, you also can't demand it. And I feel
you have to earn it.
Yeah. It's a very tantrumy behavior to be like, you don't respect me.
Cool. And now I never will because you just acted like that.
Yeah. Because you're a petulant child. Yeah. Like now I'm going to always and forever see you as a petulant child because that's how you behave, you know, and that's not respectable to me. So I think that's kind of, you know, honor's kind of related to that. And I guess, I don't know. I feel like this entire time, what we're really talking about is kind of a social capital type deal.
Yes.
When you get good boy points for doing things that people like and you don't when you don't. So does it matter though, at the end of the day? As much as I'd like to say that it doesn't matter, I can't help but feel like it does a little bit though.
It does though, yeah.
Yeah, it does though matter.
It changes the way people treat you.
Yeah. Should it though?
Yes.
Why? Or why do you think anyway? Because I could see some people saying that it shouldn't matter, right?
It shouldn't matter what your reputation is.
Yeah. Like you should be treated with respect regardless of your decisions and what you do.
That's like, that's what a reputation is. It's your behavior indicating what kind of a person you are. Now, I think, maybe the thing that could be done away with is the, you know, what kind of person you are, right? Because sometimes, you know, you might have some sort of experience that makes you change the way that you behave. And it actually does stick. And so maybe, you know, the old things that you did shouldn't, but you have to earn your way out of that pit that you dug yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to prove to everyone who saw you behaving badly that you're not going to behave badly anymore. I think a reputation is just the collective society around you watching how you behave and using that to evaluate how they expect you to behave in the future. And if they see you behaving badly and you get a reputation for behaving badly, they're going to expect you to continue behaving that way and treat you as such.
Yeah. I think the...
Like, if you have a reputation of being a liar and a cheater, I'm not going to lend you money. Like...
Okay, fair enough. And actually, that brings me to a good point, because I think what I hear a lot of people complaining about... I'll talk about these people in a minute, like what they may or may not have done to get the place that they're at. But what I see people complaining about, it's really a challenge to the paradigm of you get to hold the scale by which I'm judged. Like that's the first thing, is that you're judging me based on your criteria, and that's not fair. I should not be held to your criteria. I should hold myself to my own criteria, and you should judge me by my own criteria. That's A. I'll tell B and then we'll go from there. Okay. B, I get to tell you how I've done. And what's more important is how I rank myself on this criteria. And you should just take what I say and treat me as such. Does this sound familiar at all to you?
Yes.
Okay.
It does sound familiar. It's also complete BS. Yeah, judge me by the metric that I set for myself. Yeah, I can't see how that is in any way self-serving.
Literally so, yeah.
No, I will determine what scale I judge everyone on.
Right.
Now, I mean, that's not to say that people don't have unfair biases and things like that. And, you know, if you want to convince me that my scales are unfair, fine, do that. But yeah, you don't just get to assert, well, yeah, but actually this is what it means to be virtuous and I'm doing that. No, show me why.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I agree with you, naturally. And the reason I feel like I see this a lot, and I think that there's a type of person that's like this, beyond the fact that they're just
petulant children.
Children, yeah. it's the same attitude of a child who wants to eat sugar before bed.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally the same thing. I, the child, want to eat candy.
And that is a bad idea. You're going to bed.
Well, I don't think it's a bad idea. And who are you to tell me what is right or wrong for me? I'm eating the candy. Kid eats candy. Kid won't go to bed. And then they're like, how dare you tell me when I should go to bed? Like, and then the next morning, they're incredibly upsetty spaghetti when you wake them up at the crack of dawn because they didn't sleep last night. And they're just appalled that you have the gall to say, to ignore them and say, well, I am tired because I didn't get much sleep last night, so I don't feel like I should have to go work today. Whatever. I had a different childhood than most people. Okay.
Right.
But, yeah, it's...
Well, you did this to yourself, and I told you not to do it, but you did it anyway, and now you're getting the consequences. So, come on, you're going. Yeah.
But, my consequences, but... Yeah. It's that... And I also, but to abstract that, it's people who have made mistakes. I can think of a couple of incidences in which people have this attitude that stand out to me. People who have delved into like a lot of promiscuity, for example, and have dealt with the consequences of that. Mm. Not so much just being promiscuous, but like irresponsibly promiscuous, right? In particular, which, hear me out. You would take on a certain amount of risk whenever you engage in that behavior.
Yes.
Regardless of how responsible you are. But those suffering from the consequences of that behavior really do not like it when you say, I told you so. Which, by the way, is the most gratifying sentence in the human language.
That is true.
I told you so. Ooh, it feels good just saying it, even though I'm not using it right now.
I warned you, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I foretold this.
it's got everything that you need to feel absolutely superior to someone else.
Yep.
I knew this before you did. I advised you.
I even told you it was going to happen, and you did it anyway. And what happened? Exactly what I told you would happen.
Yes. And it's implied that I didn't make that mistake and am now benefiting while you're suffering. Like, right. 5-star knockout.
Yeah, you are suffering because of your own actions that you were warned would cause the suffering. Yeah.
And there is no comeback for I told you so. No. Especially when it's true.
Especially when it's actually true, yeah.
Scathing. Love it. It's one of my favorite things. I live for the I told you so moments. And you know what is even better about it? You don't even have to say it.
Right.
Sometimes.
There's a look.
There's a look.
There's an I told you so look.
And not only that, but to be in a position where you're contemplating whether or not to give out the I told you so feels
that
really
is,
good.
That is almost just as good as
almost
actually doing
just
it.
As good as actually doing it. Exactly. Ooh.
And then there's the follow-up where you go tell your friends how you told them so.
Yes, and make it even worse. Oh, goodness. I'm getting all hot and bothered just thinking about it. No, but here's the other half of that. I think there are a lot of people that think we're being really mean right now that are like, that's terrible. How could you be this way? Well, here's why. Because when you tell someone in advance and it doesn't work out and you are wrong, you expose yourself to the same thing.
Yes.
It's literally a gamble.
You expose yourself to the in your face.
Yes.
You're wrong.
Which is just about as devastating as the I told you so.
Well, and it really is just the reverse I told you so. It's the I told you so, it actually did work.
Right. So by being the person to initiate the I told you so precondition, yeah, by telling someone,
yeah,
so.
Yeah, you set yourself up for the reverse scenario if you're wrong.
Right.
So you better be right.
Yeah, and I don't get me wrong. I know. No one likes the, well, I'm telling you now person either. No one likes that person. And so I think I deserve the gratification of getting to say it in the end.
Yeah, see, I've given I paid my social price of being that guy who told you so. And I'm reaping my psychological reward of having told you so. And now telling you how I told you so.
It's like a social stock investment. Like, it's really what it is. It's a social wager. And you bought Amazon when it was at $10. Like, that's how it feels. You know what I mean? But the social equivalent. And the I told you so is when someone else is saying, oh, I'm going to buy the Amazon at $10. And you're saying, well, that's a bad idea. And then they get to rub it in your face afterwards. It's literally the same thing.
Right. Yeah. When they go give you a tour of their mansion.
Mansion in this case. Yeah. Oof. I love it. It's literally social capitalism is what it is. And I love every minute of it. But I think it's just that. I think that's why people hate it.
Mm-hmm.
These same people also tend to be very, they're the same kind of people that would say, we made a mistake. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't do anything wrong, but we made a mistake, comrade.
Mistakes were made.
Yes, mistakes were made, comrade.
Yeah, by whom?
I don't know. I think personal responsibility is a gateway to slavery. It's like, okay.
All right, then.
The big old jump you just made there. But yeah, that's the person who I have the pleasure of being able to dispense with the I told you so's with the most, the types of people. Not There are some specific people who I will not drag into the show, but they know who they are if they're listening to this. And if it's you, I still told you so. I
still told you so, by the way. I'm still reaping that reward.
Yeah, and it feels good to say it now. And this happened way before you're listening to it. And guess what? I'm still feeling that way the moment you're listening to this. But anyway... Temporal burn. But anyway. but yeah, it's this kind of person who they do not want to be told I told you so. They don't want to be judged by, because you kind of have to be judged
by someone.
Nobody
wants to be told I told you so, because that means you messed up. But
right, but I feel like the best I told you so moments are kind of fed off of a pattern of behavior, which is governed by what we consider to be honorable, respectable, a virtue, whatever. Like, many different names for the same thing. Just a social positive that we're trying to influence onto others to adopt as a positive, right? Or something to strive for. When I see people who, you know, are suffering from the consequences of their actions, I'm not a heartless person. But man, does it really want to make me be one when you're also trying to skirt the responsibility. Have some humility. There's another ancient word that no one uses anymore. Yeah, humble yourself a little bit and just admit when you were wrong.
Right, admit when you're wrong and change, yeah.
Which that's I think the beauty of this timeless lesson is that that's really all it takes. Just have some humility and people will let up on you.
Yes.
Like, if you're so afraid of the I told you so...
Accept it.
And then it won't sting.
And move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it won't sting the same. And at that point, that's...
Accept it as the lesson that it is, or that it should be.
Right.
It should be a... failure should be a lesson.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in the social gamery of it all, if you've accepted with humility your mistake, now I'm just, you know, a prick
For kicking you while you're down.
Yeah, exactly. That's the only way to force someone who would be... driving you home with the I told you so to let up is
to just admit that they told you so. Yeah.
Yes. And then we're good. And that is how social norms are reinforced, kids. I don't know, man. Have you ever, but this also leads to some other weird circumstances though. Have you ever had someone attempt to shame you for something that you just genuinely weren't ashamed of?
No examples are readily coming to mind.
Yeah. And I think the proper segue, if I wouldn't have just jump cut to the thing we were talking about, you know, this situation we've discussed only works when the vast majority of people, actually it works all the time. That's the beauty of it.
It's pretty great.
But it works best when you're not at a crossroads in which about half the population holds something as a moral good or as a value or a virtue, and the other half doesn't. So let's talk about it. So there's a thing going on right now, and I know we don't like to be super timely, but this will be historical in the future, so pay attention, kids. What it means to be beautiful and what it means to be healthy are often two different things, right?
Yes.
Ideally, they would be the same. Where am I going with this? So we live in a, at current year, the year
body
20,
shaming is where this is
body
going.
Shaming. Yeah. Year 2022 of our Lord, body shaming and fat phobia, things like that. There is a social conflict going on over two different things that are vying for, they are mutually exclusive technically. But both are vying for a place in the common social virtue system. And that is this idea of self-acceptance and self-love and kind of what we talked about before, which is you should take me as I am. You should appreciate and respect me regardless of these things. And I get to tell you what beautiful is. I think I'm beautiful. You should just respect that and agree.
No.
And then there's the other side of that, which in a nutshell is disguised as a separate virtue because it's the easier hill to fight from for some reason, which is, yes, you can feel happy about yourself if you want to, but your feelings don't matter if you are living an incredibly unhealthy lifestyle. You are going to be sick more, you're unhealthy. And so I do not think people should strive to be this way. People should not strive to unconditionally self-love. There needs to be right. some conditions on self-love, and those conditions should be the values of being healthy. That's like the common argument.
Yeah,
these days
and that's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Exactly.
And I am the beholder. So
right. Which weirdly, that is not the crowd out there making the most waves. Like
no.
that's not the group who is fighting the most about this, which is weird because they're the direct competitor.
Right.
Which is kind of sad. That our society has so few people willing to stand up and say, actually, I know I can think for myself and determine what I think is beautiful.
Right. I don't need you to educate me that you're actually sexy. Like,
yeah. No, I'm sorry. I was born with the ability to determine that, actually.
Right.
Weird to think about, but we'll move on.
That is weird to think about, but it is technically
true. It's technically true. It's pretty ingrained in there. You know, there's a lot of genetics that inform your decisions.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But yes. Yeah. I think the voice that's making more waves is, yeah, but you're actually unhealthy. Like, the fact that you look like that is indicative of unhealthy habits, and it's going to come back and get you later.
Right.
You're going to die early because of this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's essentially the I told you so preparing itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's the I am foretelling now, you are going to die early because of these things. You're going to be unhappy and unhealthy and suffer from illnesses because of this. And honestly, it's a really safe bet to make.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not going to be a very satisfying I told you so in my mind, because it's obvious.
Right.
Yeah. Because I know how to read, like, the most basic nutritional literature, but still. It's just another, that situation is just another example of this kind of cultural paradigm shift of attempting to accept, allowing, and it's kind of weird because on the one hand, I would feel like that I would be more on the side of the individual being able to assert for themselves, you know, and someone has made this claim to me, is like, how can you care so much about individual rights and individualism when now you're trying to let the mob tell the individual what they should do? And it's a fair enough point. I think if you don't understand the nuances, I could see why you think this is a very good thing to argue with. But keep in mind, I think at no point
But you can do whatever you want, but I can feel however I want about what you're doing.
Exactly. Like, I can tell you what I think you should do.
Mm-hmm. You don't have to do it.
Exactly. Exactly. You don't
I think you would be wise to, but that's just my opinion.
Right. And sometimes the fact that you won't allows me to get my favorite. I told you so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'd rather not have to do that.
It is interesting that you and I live for the I told you so.
Yeah.
But also in our ideal world, we would never have told somebody so.
Right. Well, I don't know that that's true, though. I don't think that in our ideal world, we all believe the same thing.
Hmm.
Our world is one that allows for other people to think differently. I mean, that's how I've always seen it. I've never thought that... I just do not want to allow for there to be a system for enough people who think the same way to then govern the others. Like, if y'all want to group up and have a commune and live the same way, that's fine. Like,
I guess, yeah, I don't know. The lens through which I've always viewed, like, telling people things is, I'm right, of course. And I want everyone else to be right also.
Yeah, and I get that. I think I'm right, naturally, right. You know, as do most people.
Yeah.
But the reality is I kind of don't care if you're right. Like, I'm really not very... I don't know. The way I look at it is I'm going to make decisions that I think are going to make my life great. And I actually kind of don't care whether you do or not. I wish that you would. And that's about as far as my care goes. But because I can't make you, like, I find it's paradoxical for me to want something so bad that I can't ensure. I feel like that's just a recipe for setting myself up for disappointment in others, which is unfair because which is somewhat unfair to myself because now I'm betting my future happiness standard against other people's choices, which to be fair is the same thing I'm doing with the I told you so, but it's a lot better to issue an
that's
I told
like the
you
short
so.
Sale. You're betting on them to mess up.
Sure. Yeah. I'm shorting their success. But here's the nice thing about that though. If I told my child, right, and I'm not saying that everyone should be my child, but like my child is someone that I should care a lot about.
Mm-hmm.
If I tell my child, look, I'm warning you now, which is the preemptive statement clause to the I told you so later.
Right. I'm setting you up for an I told you so if you don't listen to me. Yeah.
Right. And you need to be aware of this. And you need to acknowledge this now because it makes it even sweeter when you are told so. if they prove me wrong, I'm still happy though, because they're successful. So I get to be happy either way.
Yes.
Happy for them or happy for me. I get to be happy either way, you know? But if I couldn't tell them I told you so, I wouldn't be happy when they failed. I would only be sad.
Right.
So the I told you so is like a social consolation prize for those you care about and an absolute own for those you don't. And that's why I think it's perfect. You know, in a way, it's like the perfect thing that is always worth betting on because it's always sweet.
And now we know where the copium is harvested from.
Yes. Yes. Yes, we do. The wide, beautiful copium fields. But yeah, so I don't actually need everyone to leave. But this also kind of continges on this idea that I do not also want to create a system in which I have to rely on you to succeed in order for me to be successful.
Right.
Because that's that's the other thing you end up with is, well, we all need to play by the same playbook or I'm screwed. You know, I want some guarantees that I won't be screwed when you screw up. You know.
Right. I guess maybe that's one of the reasons why I want everyone to... not only be on the same page, but also actually be right, is because the people who aren't right are going to come affect me somehow.
Right. And that's a fair point, because even with all of the technology we have these days, I don't know what the exact amount of money you would need to be truly self-sufficient in that way. Like,
it's hard.
It's very hard, yeah. But I also think that it's worth striving for that same reason, because I don't know about you, but I'm not betting on, you know... the society to take care of me, you know.
How do we tell society I told you so?
Surviving typically is the best way, I think.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Being the survivor from the last society that messed up. Or by getting together in the place where all the people are doing the things right and pointing at the other society and making memes about them.
That's fun.
Yeah. The number of people constantly roasting California is hilarious to me.
That is very, very, very funny.
For example, that is a bunch of other societies pointing the finger and laughing. And it's sweet.
It does my heart good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
what have we learned?
Well, heed others' advice. Or else face the wrath of I told you so. Yes. Not wrath, but the smugness.
The smudgeness. Philosophers.
Philosophers. If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.